It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 16th day of January 2023. It is the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Birthday officially observed celebration. It's a brand new week. It's also Moran Monday. And quite honestly, it is fitting. And this is not being said smart-assedly or disrespectfully. It is fitting that the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday falls on Moran Monday every year because there is, every Dr. King holiday brings out the right-wing Morans, in, shall we say, rich profusion. Hi, I'm Robin, and we'll get into Moran Monday here in a moment.
I guess I was a couple of minutes late. I was trying to slurp down some soup to keep from falling apart.
Hey, just a quick update for those of you who are following and concerned and whatnot. Had my lowest number so far over the weekend, and then the lowest number so far this morning. I took my morning blood sugar, and it was 120. So hopefully that's a good sign, and we're moving ever downward toward, you know, it'd be great to wake up in the morning and have it be in two digits and not three. So that was encouraging, and I'm slowly getting used to being hungry all the time. So consequently, with a couple of minutes before airtime, Annette brought me a bowl of soup, which I was enjoying and didn't happen to notice 5 o'clock had come. So that's on me. That's my fault. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out to our 16th, 15th, and 14th day of the month subscribers in this desperate attempt to keep the bills paid, the lights on, and a car in the driveway. So thank you very kindly to our pal Zed in Iowa. And thank you to Mark. Thank you, Mark. And thank you to Reinhardt on the Virginia coast. Thanks as well to Robert. Thank you, Robert. And thank you to our pal Jessica. And thanks to Gary and Gaia jumping in. Thanks to an anonymous friend of the program who finished off our fundraising for last week, so that, you know, today we just have the regular fundraising goal of $300. Thank you all so very much. These are some tough months. Hopefully it'll get easier as the month, as we move into the year, and maybe we're, you know, heating a little bit less, that kind of thing. But this is a stressful time, and I appreciate all of your help in making sure that this program continues to exist. Sincerely, thank you. Thank you. It is More in Monday on the Horn. And I suppose, given the morality involved, that we should probably do the whole More in Monday shtick.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's More in Monday on the Horn. That's right. The More in Monday traveling tent show has arrived, yes, here on the 16th day of January 2023. Set up not far off the Carnival Midway, just steps away from where only moments ago you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vain hope of taking home a precious, adorable baby iguana. Mm-hmm. But now, over here, behind these thin cybernetic veil of cybernetic canvas, waits an absolute treasure trove of morons. We've got them all. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, libertarians, maggots, trumpanzees, republicans. Oh, yes, we've got them, like I said, in rich profusion. And you will be amazed. And you know, the More in Monday tent travels from city to city on a most frugal budget for little more than the cost of not even a half a stick of chewing gum per program. You too can help keep the More in Monday, traveling roadshow traveling. We're talking about a $10 a month subscription. We need new subscribers. You know, every month, our pal Zed out in Iowa provides an incentive to subscribe, doubling up to five $10 a month subscriptions. And that is still out there and available. So if you'd like to become a subscriber, kick in and Zed will double your first month subscription. And if we get all five, he even kicks in a little bit to help Brad and Desi over at the Green News Report. So that's a wonderful deal all the way around. At any rate, though, as you enter the More in Monday tent, please keep a close eye and a close hand on rings, bracelets, bangles, watches, jewelry, necklaces, piercing adornments, children, small animals, including iguanas, purses, shoulder bags, European-style messenger bags for the guys. Yes, because the morons can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. Not kidding. This is for real. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so I thought with this being the Dr. King holiday, we would start with some moranity that's taking place in Boston. Mm-hmm. Boston, where, in fact, when they were students, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his beloved soon-to-be wife then, Coretta Scott, met not far from a little spot on the Boston Commons where a new monument has been unveiled. And since it has something to do with Dr. King, well, suffice to say, it's going to draw idiots like flies to potato salad on a 4th of July picnic. Mm-hmm. I read this earlier today. By the way, if you pop by the chat room right now, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That would be Irish Dave and Rick in Europe and Squeaky and Theo. Hey, gang. Good to see you there. Thanks for popping by. Capably moderated, of course, by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, is elected not to fold space and become Man Cave, probably a good idea the way things are going these days. He is capably assisted by Horn chief mathematician and agronomist Roger in Oregon. Yeah, pop on by. You will be heartily welcomed. But no, up in Boston, there has been a new monument unveiled. It is a monument dedicated to Dr. King and his beloved spouse, Coretta. And it never ceases to amaze the way that right-wingers can get dirty in a hurry. It's a giant bronze monument. It costs some $10 million in privately raised funds. The design was approved by Martin Luther King III. And naturally, people with filthy minds saw something in it that isn't there. It's two sets of embracing arms. There's a beautiful photograph of Dr. King and Coretta embracing. And so this is a representation of that. You can see the little like pearl bracelet on Coretta Scott King's wrist and her wedding band as she embraces her husband. But of course, you know, because I guess art always triggers maggots and various and sundry right-wingers, it's making the maggots lose their collective shit. The photograph, like I said, goes back to 1964 when Dr. King won the Nobel Peace Prize. Well, Coretta Scott King's cousin, Seneca Scott, is, I guess, seeking their 15 minutes of fame by declaring that the monument looks to them, oh my God, like a dingus. Interviewed by the New York Post, of course, with, you know, just a trash can liner. The mainstream media was reporting on it like it was all beautiful because they were told they had to say that, Seneca Scott said. But then when it came out, a little boy pointed out, that's a penis! And everybody was like, yo, that's big old dong, man. If you'd showed that statue to anyone in the hood, they'd have been like, no, absolutely not. It doesn't look like a penis. Even remotely. Jesus, the stupidity of these people. Of course, being a New York Post story, the embrace has been criticized for looking more like a phallic image than a depiction of slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. and his wife Coretta Scott King embracing. And so, Seneca Scott wanted money. $10 million were wasted to create a masturbatory metal homage to my legendary family members, one of the all-time greatest American families. And then Seneca Scott went on to deride the wokeness of it. Jesus. I've never seen a penis with hands at the, you know, that's going to come out wrong. I've never seen a penis with a hand attached at the end of it. And these are clearly arms, and you can see the hands are embracing around each other. And meanwhile, like I said, Martin Luther King III approved it. It's lovely. Hank Willis Thomas is the artist. He did it for an organization called Embrace Boston. On his website, Thomas says, "When we recognize that all storytelling is an abstraction, all representation is an abstraction, hopefully it allows us to be open to more dynamic and complex forms of representation that don't stick us to narrative that oversimplifies a person or their legacy." And I think this work really tries to get to the heart of that. Seneca Scott, meanwhile, said, "The woke algorithm is just broke. I don't know what else to tell you. If you went through all of that and that's what you came up with, something's wrong." And it weighs 65,000 tons. It sits on the Boston Common. For some reason, the New York Post quoted a British rapper and podcaster named Zuby, who said, "This is awful." I don't know what lends him any particular credence. So here's the fun part. Seneca Scott's grandfather was brother to Obadiah Scott, who was the father of Coretta. And Seneca Scott said, "Well, I met her once at a family reunion once upon a time." So here's a guy who met Coretta Scott King once, briefly, at a family reunion, never saw her again, but now he's raising a stink over a monument to her and her slain husband. Solid bronze statue? Like, what are we doing here? It's doubly insulting to the black community, who still, on average, too many of us are below the poverty line. Spending $10 million on a bronze statue without heads on it? Man, it's a joke. I read this story, and honestly, this is a classic example of performative clickbait non-news. I guess it has caused some controversy. I think it's the Boston ABC affiliate did a piece.
"This is such an amazing and wonderful occasion, and we are honored to participate in the unveiling of the Embrace Boston Memorial."
And that is Martin Luther King III.
"It is a great pleasure to be a part of this unveiling ceremony for the memorial, which truly signifies the bonds of love shared by my parents, Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King. And whenever I've come to Boston in the past, I've always felt a powerful bond of solidarity with this first great American city. Of course, it is the city where my parents met and fell in love and decided to create a family. And in a way, I owe my very existence to Boston. As the place my parents found each other.
I love this monument. I also see the love and strength and unity in these hands, and how they symbolize a beautiful marriage and partnership. And it was one that changed
That sweet voice is Yolanda Renee King, the granddaughter of Dr. King.
The world. I never met my grandparents in person because they died before I was born. And yet, I feel that I know them well. We are all challenged to carry forward their unfinished work. This is the spirit we must keep as we commemorate the 37th Martin Luther King Jr. holiday on Monday. Let's make it a great day of community service, a day of brotherhood, a day of sisterhood, a day of using your platform for good, a day of love and healing in the spirit of this wonderful monument.
Nice, right? Nice. But then along comes Seneca Scott and says, "Looks like a dong, man." Because, well, I guess that's the world we live in. And I don't, you know, I guess everybody's an art critic. But the level of paranoia involved in saying, "Mainstream media was reporting on it like it was all beautiful." Well, it is all beautiful. The coloration of the bronze, the hands clasping around another arm. It has a lovely symmetry to it. And, you know, letting this imaginary little boy that Seneca Scott cited be the arbiter of artistic taste. Well, the bottom line is I'm more afraid of what's going to happen to the monument now than what people with weird minds think it looks like. And the way the New York Post did the headline, "Woke MLK penis statue insults black community, : Coretta Scott King kin." A more accurate headline would have been, "Somebody nobody ever heard of fails Rorschach test thinking statue of arms look like dick." I hope they can keep, I hope they've got security cameras all around it and can keep the nasty ass Nazis and racists and white supremacists and Klansmen from spray painting all over it. Jesus. And this from Stephen, New York. King's words, "If any Republican might be listening, Dr. King did speak other, more pointed words than the only phrase you know. In fact, we at the Horn, as a public service, will provide you a couple of paragraphs, and for your convenience, these two paragraphs are from the only speech you think he gave. Please listen. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hoped that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges." Amen and amen. The problem is that, well, in, especially in the last 20 years or so, we have backslid in the worst way. Nazis now march openly in the street, accompanied by Klansmen, proudly with their masks off. Other white supremacist fascist organizations have risen alongside them, like the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters Executive Staff and the Patriot Front and Patriot Prayer, and of course, the Proud Boys. Nothing short of an organization birthed solely for the purpose of fascist street brawling against people who don't like fascism. So by far and away, the work of Dr. King is far from done. Far from done. Thank you for that quote, Steve. Darlene in Connecticut. Oh no, she did not say the woke is broke. The woke is broke. Yes, yes. And besides, this idiot said woke culture led to the artwork. Tens of millions of dollars were wasted to create a masturbatory metal homage. Oh, for fuck's sake. I know. Emilio just said, can't you, third person, see a penis in anything with enough imagination? Who are these people? Jerry Seinfeld reference. You're not wrong. I didn't know this, but CBS Sunday Morning, thank you, Lee in New York, CBS Sunday Morning did a segment about the sculpture. They interviewed the artist, a monument to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King's love. But, you know, sick right-wingers can't see anything but... And this picture, what does this look like? A dong. And this picture, a dong. And this picture, a dong. And this picture, a dong. Got any more dong pictures I can look at? Wonder what he thinks that sculpture in Chicago looks like. Or, moreover, if you put up a statue of a dong, what would it... Just leave it be, Robin. Yeah. Obligatory Star Trek reference. Lee in New York reminds me of Nichelle Nichols remembers Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Back in 2010, during an interview with StarTrek.com, Nichols recounted how Dr. King inspired her. And the fact that he personally asked her to stay with Star Trek. She said, when I told Gene Roddenberry, I walked away, and as far as I was concerned, it was a fait accompli. Remember, I grew up in musical theater. I belonged to the theater, not to television or movies. Those were things I did when I hadn't quite made it where I wanted to go, but I was on my way. I had quite a lot going for me. I had no idea of the power of being on a screen and people seeing you weekly, but I was ready to go. As nice as this little part was, and I loved the people, and I loved working on it, and I was getting experience in a new medium, I didn't think twice about leaving. And she said Roddenberry pleaded with her to stay. He said, you can't, Nichelle. Don't you see what I'm trying to do here? She then handed him a resignation letter. He took it and looked at it with sad eyes. He was behind his desk, and I was standing in front of him, and I'll never forget it. He said, I'm not going to accept this yet. He put it in his desk drawer and said, take the weekend and think about this, Nichelle. If you still want to do this on Monday morning, I'll let you go with my blessings. Thank you, Gene, she said, and I thought, whew, that was rough, but I got through it. And she said she thinks that over the weekend she attended, she said it could have been an NAACP fundraiser or something else. Whatever it was, she was in Beverly Hills and seated at the dais as other notables entered the room to join in the festivities. One of the organizers of the event came over to me and said, "Ms. Nichols, I hate to bother you just as you're sitting down to dinner, but there's someone here who wants very much to meet you. And he said to tell you that he is your biggest fan." And I said, "Oh, certainly." I stood up and turned around, and who comes walking over me from about 10 to 15 feet, smiling that rare smile of his, is Dr. Martin Luther King. I remember saying to myself, whoever that fan is, whoever that Trekkie is, it'll have to wait because I have to meet Dr. Martin Luther King. And he walks up and says, "Yes, Ms. Nichols, I am your greatest fan. You know I can talk, but all my mouth could do was open and close, open and close." I was so stunned. And he went on to explain that Star Trek was the only show that he and Coretta let their little kids stay up and watch. And he told her what the show meant to him personally, and talked about how she had created a character with dignity and knowledge. And she said, "Thank you so much, Dr. King. I'm really going to miss my co-stars." And then he quit smiling. He said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "I told him." He said, "You cannot, and so help me." This man practically repeated verbatim what Gene had said. "Don't you see what this man is doing who's written this? This is the future. He has established us as we should be seen. 300 years from now, we are here. We are marching, and this is the first step. When we see you, we see ourselves, and we see ourselves as intelligent and beautiful and proud." He goes on, and I'm looking at him, and my knees are buckling. I said, I, and he said, "You turn on your television and the news comes on and you see us marching and peaceful. You see the peaceful civil disobedience and you see the dogs and you see the fire hoses, and we all know they cannot destroy us because we are there in the 23rd century." So that's when Nichelle Nichols said, "That's all it took." I went back on Monday morning and told Gene what had happened. He sat there behind that desk and a tear came down his face and he looked up at me. I said, "Gene, if you want me to stay, I'll stay. There's nothing I can do but stay." And he said, "God bless Dr. Martin Luther King. Somebody truly knows what I'm trying to do." And he opened his drawer, took out my resignation, and handed it to me. He had torn it to pieces. He handed me the 100 pieces and said, "Welcome back." Lee, thank you so much for that. That's beautiful. Just beautiful. All these moments. Of course, we all know that George Santos was blasted with fire hoses and attacked by dogs in both Selma and Birmingham. Because, of course, sorry, just a little moment of levity, if you will. Yeah. Okay, says Brother Deacon Asa, but what color was the content of MLK's character? Accompanied by a photo of civil rights icon Herb Cain, gone to his long home. Now, it wouldn't be Dr. King's holiday if we hadn't had, say, some input from... No idea what that is. Some input from, marginal trailer queen. That's just, dandy. She's barking and grunting, of course, citing a Bible verse that she'd probably never heard of before, or maybe it's one of those things that, because it's kind of gory. So she took to Twitter today on Dr. King's Day. From her official government Twitter account, she said, "Vengeance is mine, declares the Lord." That's not what it says in the real Bible, the King James Bible. Harlot! Apostate! Blasphemer! It's, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." Vengeance is mine, declares the Lord. God will not let you will go unpunished. The House GOP must do what is right for the American people and no longer serve the uniparty and the globalist agenda. America first. Okay. On Dr. King Day, I can't recall him preaching any sermons about vengeance. By the way, on her Twitter account, she describes herself as Christian, mother, American, business owner, and congresswoman representing Georgia's 14th district. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Good God. Nothing like a little marginal trailer queen action to... that didn't sound right, did it? To get us started. It's Moran Monday. What better place? But there's some news out there. Aaron... Ligeia, L-A-I-G-A-I-E, no clue. Wish I had my AP pronouncer today. Far-right, Trump-loving, COVID-denying, anti-vaxxer, Proud Boy leading member Aaron Ligeia has reportedly died from COVID. Nobody could make him wear a mask. He wasn't going to take no shot and get no 5G liquid barcode Bill Gates tracking device in his arm and his blood. No, hell no. He's American. He's a patriot. He's dead. Wait, we had a Star Trek. He's dead, Jim. Maybe he'll be welcomed at the Pearlies by... Diamond and Silk, of course. Him being a proud boy and a racist POS, that might not work out too well. I don't... And, of course, by dying, he helped make America great. Or at least a little better. Yeah, I know. Ralph says, aw, poor Aaron. I know. Thanks, Ralph. Ron. Ron in Raleigh. Says, subject line, MLK Jr., not loved. I would like to clear up some of the self-serving lies that the press tells now about the life and legacy of MLK Jr. Fully two-thirds of white people disapproved of him when he was murdered. Now every racist Republican claims to love MLK. They can't wait to appropriate one line from one speech to pretend that he would be a Republican if he were alive today. There's a link here that has a string of comments about his Riverside Church speech beyond Vietnam. Yeah, people got real assholish about this. Senator Barry Goldwater, who is now looked back upon as a reasonable Republican, said at the time of the Beyond Vietnam speech that it could border a bit on treason. A bit on treason, yeah. That speech, you will recall, was a year to the day from his assassination. And he was not kind about what Vietnam was doing to America. He said, perhaps the more tragic recognition of reality took place when it became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by our society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Harlem. So we've been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schools. So we watch them in brutal solidarity burning the huts of a poor village, but we realize they would never live on the same block in Detroit. I could not be silent in the face of such cruel manipulation of the poor. He said, a true revolution of values will lay hands on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into veins of people normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields, physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. It was true then, and it's true now. Nonetheless, this morning, the jackass founder of Pastors for Trump woke up and thought the very most awesomest thing that he could do would be to put out a tweet with a Photoshop. I mean, oh, it's disgusting. A Photoshop of Dr. King wearing one of those shitty red maggot hats, claiming that if Dr. King were alive today, that he would be a maggot. You know, just like Herb Cain. I think he would have had, but then again, I think he would have had the common sense, A, not to be a maggot. He would have seen the vicious, ugly hatefulness of it and decried it immediately and without reservation. And he probably also would have gotten the vaccine and worn a mask. Because he was a brilliant man and not a stupid fucking maggot. Meanwhile, back down in, you know, down in Atlanta where, Dr. King's Ebenezer Baptist Church is, where Joe Biden spoke yesterday. The Fulton County Special Grand Jury has completed its investigation into Nitwit Nero's machinations with regard to the 2020 elections. And so now they've been discharged. Judge Robert McBurney said, the court thanks the grand jurors for their dedication, professionalism, and significant commitment of time and attention to this important matter. It was no small sacrifice to serve. 8 months they spent, the grand jury. There will be a hearing 8 days from now on the 24th of January, in which a decision will be made whether to make the grand jury's report public. So I guess no indictments? Nothing? Bueller? 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 Or maybe somebody will take it and run with it. I have no answers. Meanwhile, Frank writes in from Iowa. I always feel, subject line, MLK holiday, I always feel melancholy about Martin Luther King and his legacy. In fact, it is hard to write this note to you. Martin Luther King Jr. was killed on my 18th birthday. Maybe it means nothing. Maybe the intersection of my date of birth and his death means something. I don't know. I only know that I always feel melancholy about Dr. King and his relationship to me, you, and everyone else. Well, it's a stain on our nation. That was a year when a lot of dreams died. Died hard. Died in agony. And there's the sense that we do not know to this day exactly what was behind the assassination itself. But it's hard to note that, and you know, this is supposed to be a day of service, a national day of service, not a national day of mattress sales. It's worth noting that after that greasy-headed old B-movie actor who was constantly upstaged by a chimpanzee, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, after he signed the King holiday into law back in 1983, he would go on and he would write letters to his upstanding Bible-believing, good, God-fearing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist Republican allies to make them feel better about the holiday. And in those letters, he said,
well, Mommy, we'll only talk about a specific version of Dr. King.
Over at Boston Review, there's an article from 2017. Reagan used MLK Day to undermine racial justice. The holiday was legislated as part of a strategy to defang King of his most radical qualities while co-opting him into the ideology of colorblindness. Now, I've said year after year after year that what we find each and every January, you know, this time of year, I refer to it, and not disrespectfully, but I refer to it as the Santa Clausization of Dr. King. You know, St. Nicholas was a brown-skinned Turkish bishop, Christian bishop, who was apparently deeply concerned with the well-being of the poor. And that's where the gift-giving comes from. You know, of Santa Claus. And so now, you know, 1,500 years later, all we remember of St. Nicholas was that he liked good little children and liked to give them gifts. We scarcely even remember the fact that the red robes with the white trim were priestly vestments and not a Santa suit because he lives at the North Pole. And that's where we're going with Dr. King. Um, And that's been the goal all along of the King Holiday, as envisioned. By Ronald Reagan and the assholes and right-wingers surrounding him. Old 666 absolutely despised the notion of the King Holiday.
It'll cost the government too much money.
Wait, that's Trump. Well, mommy, yeah, there he is. It'll cost $18 million a year. That's too much money for a black guy. We need to remember that when it got to the Senate floor in October 1983, that filthy old racist who is hopefully burning in hell as we speak, if there is a hell, and there isn't, that Jesse Helms filibustered the bill and said, excoriated Dr. King's, quote, calculated use of nonviolence as a provocative act. He was, after all, a communist. Mm-hmm. A reporter asked Reagan in October 1983, Mr. President, Senator Helms has been saying on the Senate floor that Martin Luther King Jr. had communist associations, was a communist sympathizer. Do you agree? And all Reagan said was,
we'll know in about 35 years, won't we?
That was when the King file was due to be unsealed by the FBI. By the way, it took John Conyers of Michigan 15 years introducing the bill to get it passed. When Reagan finally signed it into law, he wrote a note apologizing to Meldrum Thompson Jr., who at the time was the GOP governor of New Hampshire. And he had begged and pleaded with Reagan not to sign the holiday into law. And Reagan explained to him in the letter that the holiday's based on an image of King, not reality. That there would be, in fact, a Santa Clausization of Dr. King. And it was the origins of the holiday, as envisioned by Republicans, was to focus on colorblind society, which they then used and continue to use to this day as a weapon to negate efforts to make right in any way, shape, form, or fashion the racism that has informed this country from its origin to this very day. And so consequently, you get the NRA in the 80s, you get the moral majority who are out there barking and grunting that they're the ones whose rights are really being trampled. Poor little white folks. And now, because of all those efforts in the 80s, we have that favored canard, that bullshit piece of racist agitprop that Fucker Carlson loves so much, great replacement theory. The real victims are the white people. Some of these bright white wingers actually call themselves the new Rosa Parks. People who go hammer and tongs to make sure that a woman doesn't have the right to control the workings of her own body call themselves freedom riders. You know, fetus freedom riders. Jesus. And, of course, people who rally constantly against the LGBTQ, QQIA plus community, well, so they say that they're carrying Dr. King's dream forward. It's worth thinking about these things on this particular day and other days, for that matter. Of course, I don't know how much of this will be out there for public viewing or hearing beyond, you know, beyond this program. But at least we're speaking it. And all of this business of emphasizing the color blindness theory, well, it gets weaponized by the likes of Stevie Three Shirts, the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells. When they start talking about taking back America and reclaiming America, well, they have to be reclaiming it from somewhere. Who do you suppose they're reclaiming it from? Doesn't take long, does it? And, of course, President Biden said yesterday, he was invited to Ebenezer Baptist Church by Senator Raphael Warnock, who has his very own full 6-year Senate term now. Whew. Yeah. There was a gospel hymn sung, and then Senator Reverend Warnock, joked at the president that, being how Joe Biden's been a Catholic all his life, he said, our service may seem a little exuberant to you. And at the end of the service, the choir sang, "We Shall Overcome." But he also said, President Biden did, "I've spoken before Parliament, kings, queens, leaders of the world. I've been doing this for a long time. This is intimidating." And he said, of Dr. King's dream, "It's a dream in which we all deserve liberty and justice, and is still the task of our time to make that dream a reality, because it's not there yet." And he said he has a bust of Dr. King in his office. He continued, "The battle for the soul of this nation is perennial. It's a constant struggle. It's a constant struggle between hope and fear, kindness and cruelty, justice and injustice." Sometimes it feels like the dark side's winning, doesn't it? Yeah. Steve in New York points out, "Guess who's bringing legislation to require photo IDs to vote? You guessed it. The fascist government of the UK. I've got another UK story here. I'll bet Steve might even know what it is. Jesus. Hi, Claire. Claire's our friend across the pond. And Mary Old England. Steve adds that the Fulton County Grand Jury, there's an upcoming hearing on the issue of indictments. Ron and Raleigh notes, Ronnie was a racist son of a bitch that most white folks love. I remember an open mic clip where Ronnie and Richard had a great laugh about African delegates not being used to wearing shoes. Both of these racists won their presidential elections by landslides. There's a lot of political hay to be made out of racism in this country. Always has been. And on the 19th, which is Dr. King's birthday, had he lived, he would have been 94 years old. And I would be remiss if I did not note that on this day, well, 48 states are celebrating the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. birthday holiday. 48 states. Today, however, in Mississippi, Stan, and Talabama, it's King Lee Day. Because they'll also celebrate the birth on the same date of the traitor, old Bobby Lee. Yes, the enslaver and the man who spent countless bucket seas of blood and treasure trying to make sure that people enslaved remained enslaved. That old gray-bearded piece of treasonous trash. Mm-hmm. How's that for sickening? In Texas, January 19th will be Confederate Heroes Day. And they'll celebrate, well, treason. How many other countries have holidays that celebrate treachery and treason? I mean, I feel fairly confident that there's no national holiday on April 22nd, or April 20th, I should say, April 20th in Germany. But, you know, here we are. King Lee Day. Yeah. Oh, and an obituary today. At the age of 95, the Italian actress, Gina Lollobrigida, passed away. And for a certain age group, namely mine, maybe folks a little bit older, she's a shining example of learning about someone through cartoons. When I was a kid, I had never heard of Gina Lollobrigida, let alone seen any of her films. But I learned of her existence via her portrayal on an episode of The Jetsons as Gina Lola Jupiter. Weird how things like that happen. But she was a brilliant actress. And she was much in demand in the 50s and 60s. At one time referred to as the most beautiful woman in the world. A 1952 Italian film called Altri Tempi otherwise known in English as infidelity. She played a woman accused of being too sexy. The next year, by the next year, she was playing opposite Errol Flynn in Crossed Swords. And then she played in Beat the Devil, the John Huston film that became a cult classic. And then she was forever cemented in film lore with Pane, Amore e Fantasia, Bread, Love, and Dreams, 1953. 95. Long and rich life. So that's pretty much the first hour. That's the filler roster for Moran Monday. We have more Morans. Oh, yes, we do. Here's a fun one. The phrase to own the libs has become a trope for indicating Republicans doing something monumentally stupid and usually harmful to themselves because they think the libs will get upset. Well, here we are. The Horn Family Community Congregation knows that one of the conditions for me being able to finally become myself was quitting smoking. I had to quit smoking because at my age, it presented a profound risk of deep vein thrombosis in conjunction with estrogen. And having tried and tried and tried to quit smoking over the years, you know, the old line is smoking or quitting's easy. I've done it a million times. But having tried and tried and tried and failed and failed and failed and failed, on that moment when they said, "No, you're going to be stuck living that way if you don't quit smoking." Well, I quit smoking and took my first dose of estrogen on the same day, September 15th, 2020. And I charted, if you go back to the archives, I charted my quitting smoking over the course of weeks and months. And a couple of people who had quit smoking said, you know, eventually you'll get to the point where you don't think about it all the time. Eventually you'll get to the point where you're not counting weeks. You're not counting days or weeks or months. It's just your reality that you are a non-smoker. And I'm really grateful to the folks in the community who told me that because they were right. And so I kicked a 43-year habit that sometimes rose as high as 2 and 3 packs a day. And I've stayed kicked. And I don't miss them. And while I'm not going to be, I hope never to be one of these intolerant, you know, assholes about it, the fact is, once you get your sense of smell back, they stink. Jesus, they stink. They stink horribly. And you become able to notice it. You smell it on people's breath, you know, in their clothing, in rooms where there's been smoking. And so, you know, we talked last week when we were talking about what Exxon knew about climate change and the effects thereof back in the 70s. I mentioned that it was very similar to what the tobacco industry knew precisely about the effects of tobacco on human health, even earlier. And the tobacco companies did know. They knew everything. They knew they were killing their own customers. But of course, smoking is all about addiction maintenance. No, you damn silly sissy liberals. No, it's about freedom. Freedom, damn it. Freedom. Freedom! If you can't smoke anywhere you want to and puff your toxic particles all over who the hell ever, well, you ain't free. By the way, the effort to get young people not to smoke, at one point in time, one-third of young people were smoking. Now it's down to 9% and falling. So that's kind of tough on the cigarette industry. That's why they're expanding into things like vaping. Well, I didn't know this, but it's a historical fact that back in 1871, the Speaker of the House was James G. Blaine of Maine. Blaine in Maine. He banned smoking in the galleries and on the House floor while in legislative session. I don't know if he banned chewing tobacco, spittoons and whatnot. And oh God, just think about the House floor and the Senate floor back in the day with those. Gross, full body cringe. The tobacco juice stains on the floor where the distinguished gentleman from South Carolina missed. Well, one of the things that, you know, remember when the first thing they did was take down the magnetometers? Well, there's something else that went with it. The magnetometers went, and the ashtrays came back. And so, lo and behold, the stench of cigarette smoke will once again be smelt in the halls of Congress. It's worth remembering that back when John Boehner was Speaker, when he exited the Speaker's office, they had to pull up the carpets, lay down new carpets, repaint the entire room, and then install an ozone machine just to get the stench of Boehner's cigarette smoking out of the room. And now the article at Bloomberg News notes that Representative Tom Cole of Oklahoma can often be found smoking in the committee's space on the third floor of the Capitol. Tells you a little bit about him, doesn't it? And, of course, it's a man thing. I first noticed this story via an opinion piece by Amanda Marcotte at Salon. She notes that beyond being simple trolling on the part of the Republicans, it's also about a close cousin to trolling in the constellation of motivations that make right-wingers such baffling and exhausting people: toxic masculinity. For about as long as supporters of basic public health have argued for restrictions on tobacco use, conservatives have acted as if any regulations whatsoever on their foul-smelling phallic symbols literally amounts to prying the penises off their bodies. Oh, we're back to the penises again. Before Rush Limbaugh died of lung cancer, the right-wing radio host who coined the term feminazi often portrayed smoking as a wholesome, manly activity that liberals wanted to take away from men purely to emasculate them. It's true that everybody who smokes dies, but so does everyone who eats carrots. And then there's Mike Pencilneck Geek, who back in 2001 said, banning smoking, anti-tobacco regulation, is a backhanded big government disguised in do-gooder health care rhetoric. And then said, in 2001, he said, and I presume the check cleared, smoking doesn't kill. And then they screech about the nanny state. The Proud Boys videoed themselves smoking in the Capitol when they were part of the terrorist attack of January 6th. And weirdly, public health is seen as and derided as the feminization of the culture and an attack on their delicate and dainty masculinity. Yeah, this runs on a continuum right alongside dying of COVID to own the libs. So now people are going to have to breathe Republican smoke. You know, because they're manly, these Republicans. That asshat, Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone Kennedy down in Louisiana stand, said that liberals carry around Ziploc bags of kale. And he said, kale tastes to me like I'd rather be fat. And, of course, he went after yoga mats, too, because, you know, women use yoga mats, and women mostly do yoga. And when he mentioned all this at a rally for Hershey Walker, Texas Strangler, the crowd just clapped and they cheered when he talked about them sissy kale-eating liberals. Yeah. And it all ties in, as Ms. Marcotte notes, with the fact that there is a growing, sharp distinction when you compare people who live in Democratic-controlled states to, or counties, rather, to counties controlled by Republicans. More and more, if you live in a Republican-controlled county, people are more likely to die of suicide, heart disease, opioid overdoses, obesity-related illness, COVID. And in the sanely governed counties, the overall health index, the overall health quality, is significantly better. But in the long way, in the long run, well, hopefully the Republic, I don't know, would Mitch, you know, Kentucky is a tobacco state. If McTurtle, Moscow Mitch, ever gets hold of the Senate again, you reckon those spaces will be filled with the stinking detritus of cigarette smoke? Ashtrays in the hallway and whatnot? I don't know. But we are near the halfway point of the program. And we had $300 to raise, and we still have $300 to raise. By the way, I didn't... Kat, you're... Did I mention it? Your challenge from last week did get filled, so thank you for that, Kat. But we do, we got 300 bucks to go, and we are presently at, well, nil. Zero. Zed. Zip. Hopefully it will not stay that way. Let's run over to the Skype line, check in with Scott. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Hey, Robin, I am so relieved.
Relieved?
That you changed the subject. I was sitting
from
down
which?
Well, I'm going to tell you. I was sitting here all ready to have a wonderful celebration of the life and times of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And you didn't go, I don't even think you went 90 seconds into the show before you were quoting some dumbass that's distantly related to the late good doctor, Reverend Doctor.
And well, I actually related to his wife.
Or to his, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you're a bullshitter, it doesn't matter what family tree you fell out of, you know? And I was thinking, oh, dear, this took a turn that I could have gone without. But you got off it, and I'm so glad you did, because, you know, I hold the birth date and the life and even the martyrdom, if that's not too strong a term, of the man as moments of great reverence, even as an old man. You know, I'm an old man now. He's no longer. But I didn't realize that he was born in 29. That he was only 39 when he was killed. Can
yeah.
you imagine that?
He was a young man.
But what, look at all that he accomplished in that short span of years. And I will never forget. I will never forget the night that happened. It's burned into my psyche. I mean, having been through, let's see, at that point, we had the killing of John Kennedy in 63 and all that. We had the killing of Malcolm X in 65. We hadn't had the shooting of Bobby Kennedy. That didn't come till June of 68. See, you've got to have your scorecard to know, you know, to keep track of the madness that unfolded in that decade. And you just get to the point where you're growing, if not accustomed to the thought of your president being blown away on a city street, you know, but it's like every couple of years, someone, some asshat, some insane person was taking out another of our leaders, you know, and I look back at it, Robin, and I have to pinch myself to really acknowledge that I lived through such a rancid time in our country, thinking all the while, well, gee whiz, it's got to get better. It's got to get better. And what did we do? We survived the 60s somehow, many of us. And then what happened in the 70s? Disco happened.
Well, don't go gooning on disco, because that's actually a freedom movement.
No, I do like disco. I'm one of the few people who still do. I don't have my platform shoes and my plaid pants anymore, but I used to get up there and shake whatever booty was available to me back then, back in the 70s. But, you know, we survived the 60s, have a big old party in the 70s, go to sleep in the 80s, just in time for the age of Reagan to unfold. And it's like, good God, what a life. What an incredible time. I wouldn't want to have been around at any other time than the time that has encompassed the span of my life thus far. And it's nothing short of morbid curiosity that keeps me upright and above ground, because I want to see, is there going to be a satisfactory ending, or is it all going to go to shit? And it's sort of a subgroup of what we talk about, the two
well,
of us.
Well, the 60s, you know, the 60s were birthed in the 50s. And
well,
you can make an argument that some of the impetus for the civil rights movement arises out of black soldiers coming home and realizing that they were actually more they were freer fighting fucking Nazis and getting shot at,
yeah,
than they were coming home and trying to live in peace in their own neighborhoods.
Yeah, sit at the lunch counter and get lunch.
And I think we don't pay necessary attention to the integration of the military that was accomplished by Harry Truman, who, interestingly enough, had been a member of the Klan.
I thought his daddy was. I didn't know he was.
I think he might have been. Somebody, the research department can check me on that.
Well, what do you want from a guy growing up in Lamar, Missouri?
I'm not excusing, but failed haberdasher, World War I doughboy. But anyway, so that comes along. Then we get the backlash of Eisenhower and this vision of a tidy white America with really big closets. And then the 60s is a backlash against the 50s. And it is a yearning, keening cry for freedom and equality. And that party that was the 70s was a way of anesthetizing the country. You know, the happiest man in America upon the assassination of Dr. King had to be Richard Milhouse Pinhead Nixon, as Truman called him. Richard Pinhead Nixon.
Yeah, he threw me. I didn't know who Richard was. If it said Dick, I would have known right away who we were talking about.
Ronnie and Dick, yeah. But the thing is, Nixon's ascension would have been a very different thing with a living Martin Luther King Jr. in it. We would have had tapes, Nixon White House tapes, of, you know, damn it, Henry, it's that communist black preacher, that King fellow, he's ruining America and poisoning the minds. Well, Barry Goldwater was right. It probably was treasonous what he said.
Well, don't get me started on Nixon. God damn, we'll be here forever. But I marvel at the fact that we've gotten as much done. You know, he got as much done in his brief lifetime as he did. He continues to serve as a model and an inspiration for many of us. And it tears at your heart and your psyche. And there was that, not a stupid song, but it sort of capitalized on. Remember Dion and the Belmonts?
The
group from the 50s, yeah. Early 60s. Well, Dion, after the Belmonts era, used his real name, Dion DiMucci, I believe his legal name was, and did that song, Abraham, Martin, and John. And I understand the intent of it, okay? You see your leader shot down in rapid succession over a few short years, and you want to remember them or honor them or remind people just who we lost and how we lost them, you know. But then again, that it was just a little too slick. I mean, if you want to hear it done in a heartfelt way, listen to Moms Mabley's version of it from one of her albums. I think she had a single. I don't know how well it charted. But here was a woman who was born and raised in South Carolina, grew up in the black vaudeville, and then kind of segged into mainstream media, had quite the following, and was a funny lady, a little dirty around, you know, some of the topics that she touched upon, but innocent, you know, but a little risque for the time. She certainly was no Red Fox, you know, and could have been if she wanted to, but she was, you know, she knew she had to be on Mike Douglas and Merv Griffin and those shows, Ed Sullivan. But yeah, her version of Abraham, Martin, and John will really tear at your heartstrings. And I think it comes from a more authentic place, not to say anything against Dion or the Belmonts, for anybody who ever played the Belmonts back on Top 40 radio many moons ago.
Right.
But that's not why I called. I just, these people that I'm of the opinion that if you don't have something good to say about someone, you ought to just kind of shut up, you know, at least for the day, at least for the week, at least for the month.
Oh, but they can't. This is catnip to them.
I know. Because they know that it upsets some of us.
But right. And you know, because they have the minds of you know, kindergarten, well, preschoolers.
Well,
they live for it.
Well, they're the type that torment puppies and kittens and
yes.
pull the wings off of creatures who have wings for a perfectly good reason, you know?
Hurt butterflies.
Well, yeah. But anyway, I just, I don't know. Happy birthday, Dr. King. And what is with these people up in Boston? I mean, do you remember the busing back in the 70s?
Sure, yeah.
So some of the more violent reactions to it took place in the so-called Cradle of Liberty.
Sit, Liberty, you
know?
Sit.
Yeah, sit, you dog. You know? And people would think that up there that the people were somewhat rational, but not all of them were Kennedy Democrats. A lot of them were reactionary followers of Henry Cabot Lodge, for fuck's sake.
Right.
And that ilk. You know, the New England Reserve or something. I wish I still had it. And I wish it would still fit me if I did have it. My T-shirt. I think I posted the picture once. I used to be disgusted. Now I'm just amused.
You know? You know, you bring that up, and I immediately think of that old rhyme. What is it? Here's to dear old Boston. And this is good old Boston, the home of the bean and the cod, where the Lowells talk to the Cabots, and the Cabots talk only to God.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, there is a heritage, a strain that runs through a lot of the old families up in that region, where they literally were on a first name basis with God, at least according to their telling of it.
Oh yeah.
So, well, how are you? Are you hanging in there?
I am. I'm getting used to this new eating regimen, and let's see. Today I've had had some cottage cheese this morning.
I like cottage cheese. You know the best way to have it?
How?
Is with a little lemon pepper and a little bit of seasonal, you know, the season salt.
Stuff. Yeah, or maybe Lowry's or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just the lemon pepper.
Oh, that sounds delightful. I'll have to try it.
I get it by the, I'm not content with a pint or a quart of it. I get these big honking containers of it that you need help carrying it out of the store. I just finished off one the other day. I mean, every night.
So cottage cheese this morning, I had it with mandarin oranges.
And never tried that.
Then lunch was just a lettuce salad with some tomatoes and Greek dressing and feta cheese.
Well, that sounds...
And then this evening's meal was a big carb-heavy bowl of split pea soup with ham and bacon.
Did you have a slice of Nova toast on the side?
No, there is no bread. Although over the weekend, I had my first sandwich in weeks.
Oh, but see, Nova toast, I don't think counts as bread because it's so close to not being bread-like that.
It's got a shit ton of carbs in it. Trust me.
Well, what do you want, a carb restricted?
Yeah, I'm trying to get my diabetes under control.
Oh, Jesus. Well, you're taking the medications.
Right, but you have to also alter your lifestyle, and I'm trying to walk and get more exercise, and work up my suspiciously large woman beach bod for this August.
Well, see, I take my medicine, but I do watch my diet to an extent, but not to the point where I'm inconvenienced in any major way. I mean, come on, life is short.
But today, like I said, today I had my lowest number yet, 120.
Now, what, do you have that thing implanted in your arm?
No, And I'm not on insulin yet, so.
No, but I mean,
I don't want to be. If I go on, if I get to the point where I need insulin, I'm a dead girl because I can't afford $1,400 a month for insulin to.
Oh no.
Help maintain some pharma CEO in the lifestyle to which he has become accustomed.
Oh, you're just a spoil sport. That's all there is to it.
I'm a bitch.
But no, I'm talking about that monitor thing.
Yeah, no, I know. No, I just, I've just got a little external blood glucometer and a. Stab my finger with a little lancet thing for any. Oh, and by the way, for anybody who does have to test their blood glucose and do a stick a couple of times a day or whatever, this is an unpaid product placement. But when I run across a piece of equipment or a gizmo or whatever that really works, I want to share it. So the part of testing my blood glucose that I absolutely despise the most. Is the whole time-consuming process of opening up the little lancet gizmo, sticking the little plastic lancet in it, twisting off the little knob at the top, and making sure I don't lose it, and then putting the lid back on, alcohol prepping my finger, wiping the alcohol off with a cotton ball, then the actual stick, and wiping away the first drop, and getting the second drop, and then. Putting the little drop on the little little stick and then watching it count down from five to whatever number. So I found and it's by AccuCheck, and it's actually a system called FastClix. If you have to test your blood sugar, this will cut down the time you spend doing so by a couple of minutes at least. Because
the thing with all the accoutrements.
Well, the thing is, this little lancet gizmo, the lancets themselves are specialized. They're like six lancets in a little container, and you just pop the little bastard on, put the cap on, and boom, you're done. You're done, and again, 2 to 3 minutes time saved.
Yeah.
So it's AccuCheck FastClix. FastClix.
I believe I've seen those.
And it's no more expensive, as far as I can tell, than the regular pain in the ass fooling around with them lancets. And then when you've gone through all six, you just take it out, throw it away, drop in another clip, another magazine, as it were.
It's like a cartridge container, you know.
Yeah, it's like a clip or a magazine for a firearm, you know, just. Pop it out, put a new one in, and you're good for six more tests.
Theoretically, you could, if you weren't interested in testing but would rather have a little sport, you could put in a clip, aim it at a fly walking around the rim of a glass.
No, it doesn't pop out. No, it doesn't. There are no projectiles involved, Scott.
Well, what the hell? I mean, we count on
that's
science.
What your flit gun's for.
Flit? Yes.
But in answer to your question, I'm doing good. Over the weekend, I bought some of the keto bread because it's got about half the carbs of a regular slice of bread. And my daughter-in-law made these beautiful club sandwiches, ham and turkey and lettuce and onions and mayo and tomato.
No, that's not.
Oh, I wolfed that thing down like somebody was going to take it away from me. She cut it in the pretty little quarters, you know, the little triangle fourths. And she's wonderful, and I love her.
That's not like the Ezekiel bread, is it? Have you ever had that?
No, I have not had that. I know what you're talking about. No, this is just keto conscious, very few calories, very few carbs, and it's not terrible. And it toasts up beautifully, just toast and butter. Oh, it's wonderful. But it was a good weekend. Since you asked, I went on a date yesterday.
Oh, how'd that work out?
He's a really sweet fellow. And we had brunch, and
I behaved myself, and I didn't, you know, get dessert or anything, and we just sat and talked and sort of got to know each other. Felt cute. So it was a nice, and it was a beautiful day yesterday, too, which was a big deal. We saw the sun for the first time in several days, because this time of year can get pretty depressing and sunless.
Well, and see, it's going to go on for a little while longer. Do you know yet how far away we are from spring?
I was thinking about that just this morning. We are we're 26 days into winter, which means we're about 40 some days left. You know, it's March 21st, so that's 21 plus 28, 29, 49 days plus. Oh, shit, that's a long time.
Yeah, I hope they are not hard days, because in some parts of the country, they can be brutal.
Yeah. And well, we got snow Friday night.
Have you ever had those times where winter seems to be ending early? It's like nature's way of trying to fake us out.
Yeah, it's nature's way of going, psych! And it... And it fucks up everything, because, you know, the sweet little flowering plants and fruit trees are like, oh, it's warm, we're going to bloom now.
Buttercups don't have a chance.
And then it comes back and it's like, nah, no peaches for you this year. There went the apples. There went the plums. But no, thank you for asking. It was a lovely weekend.
I'm glad you had a good encounter and a nice weekend, and the weather cooperated.
Yeah, I think we'll probably see each other again, maybe go to a movie or something.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. They still do movies? I thought after the grand epidemic.
Well, I hear the wet Avatar movie is... That didn't come out right, did it?
Is that the new James
is a big is a real thing to be seen on screen?
I don't know. I just never gotten into those.
Oh, the first Avatar movie was wonderful. And I hope this one's good. You know, it's just pure escapism. But you know, the first Avatar movie, I sat there and watched it and was like, oh well, isn't this a metaphor for what's happening on planet Earth? They even had the great big giant dump trucks like we got on mountaintop removal sites.
Good Lord.
You know, painted in that caterpillar yellow.
Well, as you were talking about, you know, some states not observing the Martin Luther King birth holiday.
Yeah.
Who was that official? Maybe a governor, maybe in Arizona.
Yeah.
What was that? I kept sitting here.
What was his name? Evan Mecham?
Mecham, yes, yes.
Do I have that right?
I think that Evan. I couldn't think of his first name. I knew it was an odd name. Yes, but those people, they just want to resist.
Well, the fact that Ronnie Reagan had to write and hold the hand of the little racist piece of shit governor in New Hampshire.
Well, don't worry. We're not going to let anybody know the real Dr. King. We'll just have a sanitized version that white people can feel good about. Mommy?
I just, these fuckers, we need to not have them be in charge of anything for like a generation or two until, I don't know if it can be bred out of us, but we cannot fall victim to our lower and base instincts. And we're steadily going down that section of track. I know this is not news to you, but it's upsetting and it's disheartening, you know, for someone who's been around a while and has actually seen signs of things getting better, but it's like one step forward and two or three steps back, and that's no way to progress. I mean, it's...
Right, that's why I said what I said about had Dr. King survived, he would have been a howling thorn in the side of Richard M. Nixon.
Well, after his a year to the day, like you were saying, the Beyond Vietnam speech, sermon that he gave at, where the hell was that? Was that at, what is that big church up in New York?
Yeah, that's the Riverside Church.
Riverside Church, yeah. His meter started clicking, counting down, and I think it was a year to the day that he was taken out of the equation. They could not let that stand.
It was a year to the day.
Wasn't it? I'm pretty sure it was. And it's like, no. We must not have this. But it's. And I don't think the country has ever gotten its equilibrium back since the 60s. I think we, in places, may have done so, but not to the point where it could be applied in any meaningful, ongoing way. I think the opposite side, when they see an opportunity, they take it, and they bore in like gophers or something. They're all from the rodent family, okay, in one form or another. And they're like rodent leech creatures from somewhere, and it's just, you call Otto the Orkin Man, you know, we're with these mothers, you know?
Yeah.
Coming up out of the drain, doctor, what can we do? Jesus. No thanks very much.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And of course, the tobacco thing that I was talking about just before I brought you on. I had a note just a minute ago from our buddy George, who said, my dad smoked cigars all my life until surgeons had to remove part of his tongue and jawbone due to cancer. It ruined his previous active social life. It made me sad to see the national champion Georgia Bulldogs lighting up stogies to celebrate.
Well, look at Limbaugh. He used to have that big old thing in his mouth.
And then he would talk about my formerly nicotine-stained fingers.
Well, it's a wonder he lived as long as he did, given his various health issues.
Yeah. Steve in New York said, Scott tonight is solidifying his status as the Horn Sage in real time. That was nice. Thank you, Steve.
Well, is that a good?
That's a good. Thing, though, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Well, I get contemplative when we mark anniversaries, or in this case, not a death anniversary. See, I like it better when we mark the birth anniversaries instead of the death anniversaries, because I like to have, like there to be
beginnings some of things, not ends of things.
Beginnings and hopefulness and upbeat and optimistic, to the extent that that's even remotely possible in today's world. But I've got to be a realist and say it. And what is this horseshit with these documents that when he was vice president, current President Biden, I mean, who packs these people? I mean, I can understand Trump going, you know, getting the lowball estimate on movers and packers, you know. But I'm surprised that Mr. Biden was if he was indeed as careless as it appears he was.
Do you really think it's carelessness, though?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, because you can't get a straight accounting from the media in today's world. I don't care where you turn, what channel or what outlet, they've all got an agenda of one type or another. And ever since Watergate, everybody is looking for the next big political scandal, and that was 50 years ago. And we've just, every couple of months, there's some new urgency that they've thrust upon us, and it's got to be the next horror for everybody to be upset about. And not all of them qualify to get in into your knickers into a bunch over, you know, I think. Because if everything is of equal intensity and severity, then nothing is. Or have I got that wrong? I don't know anymore.
No, I don't think you've got it wrong. I just, I mean, it's a little weird to me, but then again, classified, you know, I tend to look and say, listen, you know, Biden didn't claim to declassify them with his mind powers. And yes, he didn't have them stored in a U-Haul self-storage unit, for God's sakes. And, you know, the National Archives didn't have to beg and plead for a freaking year.
No, and there wasn't a, it wasn't like an FBI operation.
And now you've got Republicans saying, well, why didn't the FBI raid Biden like they raided our God Emperor? Because he did everything right. You find out about this, you go, oh, fuck. And then you deal with it.
Wasn't there a song or children's rhyme about why is one thing not like another?
One of these things is not like the other. One of these things does not belong. Yes.
Yes. Well, that this is a perfect example of that.
Wasn't that the electric company?
Oh, I don't know. I pay the bill every month, and that's the last I hear from them until.
Not different electric company.
Oh, you mean the PBS electric company?
Yeah, or maybe it was Zoom.
Oh, I remember Zoom, I think. I remember the electric company and the Sesame Street, and there was another one.
There was Sesame Street, the electric company, and Zoom. And
see, I was the wrong generation. I was, you know, you were saying something earlier that made me think that we were so informed. I think it was Gina Lola Brigida you were talking about. Without Hanna-Barbera and Warner Brothers cartoons, we would be.
I learned about classical music from Warner Brothers. Oh, yeah. I learned about literature. And then, you know, yeah, George Jetson, I forget what the plot was. Jane was afraid he wasn't in love with her anymore or something, or maybe she was just feeling bad about her, but she entered some sort of beauty pageant, and
you were deep into it, weren't
Gina
you?
Gina Lola Jupiter. And my dad would sit there watching, and I remember, you know, Gina Lola Jupiter, and he'd get this smile on his face. Yeah. And it was another decade or more before I found out who Gina Lola Brigida was. And I went, oh, Gina Lola Jupiter. You know, because those guys were really, really sharp and culturally adept.
Well, and not to get off into animation, ain't
you,
but...
Land sakes, Wolfie, ain't you going to eat me? Ain't got time, Granny. Hit the bricks.
Yeah. Hanna and Barbera were... They headed up the MGM movie film company, their animation division.
Right, and then they went out on their own on a very low budget basis.
Yeah,
and they couldn't even pay Mel Blanc what he was worth, but he liked what they were doing.
Yeah, and they did a slew of things. They did the Flintstones. They did the Jetsons. They did.
The Canadian Mountie.
Dudley Do-Right.
Dudley Do-Right. Yeah.
This girl Nell.
Yeah, and then there was the. Well, they did Yogi Bear.
Well, yeah, and Huckleberry Hound.
Oh, Yogi! Now I'm all sticky.
Quick, McGraw.
Yeah. Hey, Snagglepuss, Snaggletooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exit stage left.
The Mises. I hate Mises to pieces.
Yeah, yeah. I hate Mises to pieces. Yeah.
Trixie and Dixie, the little mice. Do you remember them?
Yeah.
Jesus, here comes my Saturday morning, back in the '60s. It was like three straight hours of Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah. Well, you saw them. You probably saw them in the first run. I mean, these were deep into reruns by the time I was watching them.
Yeah. But,
and now, and you know, and then along comes Scooby-Doo, and the voiceover talents of Casey Kasem and Zoinks.
I didn't do Scooby Doo, and I didn't do what was that other one that I thought was just too silly? George of the Jungle. It just didn't move me. But anything Warner Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Most anything of Jay Ward and Bill Scott, Rocky and Bullwinkle and all that crew. Although I think George of the Jungle were from Jay Ward, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. By the way, I need to send out a thank you to Emilio. We were at Goose Egg. Emilio got us off the schneid. We are now down to $93. $293, I should say. $293, and there's a challenge on the table, courtesy of Stephen New York. A $9.80 challenge in honor of the 98-yard fumble recovery for the Bengals last night. Hooday! Yeah, I saw that, and I was like, oh, my God. Oh, wow. And, you know, away he went.
Who were they playing?
They were playing the Ravens.
Ballmer, yeah.
And, you know, they had a second-string quarterback in, and some pissed-off running back this morning said, you know, if we'd had Lamar Jackson, he would have made that touchdown. Eh.
Well, they don't call them Monday morning quarterbacks for nothing, because...
Well, he was a Monday morning tailback.
Or whatever. I don't even...
By the way, thank you to Lee in New York serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Trivia Research Department. Gina Lola Jupiter, glamorous foreign movie star. She appears at the Miss Solar System contest. She hopes to contribute a little something to the contest festivities. She advises the girls from the beauty contest to understand the proper way of walking. She says walking is very important and it can mean the difference between winning and losing. Okay.
Well, you can't argue with that.
George resigned from her fan club because he realized how beautiful Jane really was.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. God, the things we get into. Hey, let me bring the stress line on. I don't know who we got, but
Be anyone.
Hey, welcome to the program. Hello. You're on.
You caught them unawares.
Well, we'll just keep it. We'll keep it up there, and if they decide to talk, we'll say hello. Of course, I like to say hello, Dimitri.
We're getting to that time of year, approaching it anyway, where TCM goes all in for. Either Oscar winners or Oscar nominees.
Oh, yeah, that's always fun.
Oh, God, I just love when they do that. And you know what I watched over the weekend? The first two parts, you remember That's Entertainment?
Oh, yes.
The retrospectives of all
I love those.
They're on my watch list. They were... Oh, wait a minute. The mothership's here, Robin.
I wondered what the hell that was. That sounded like the noise from that movie Contact, that shrieking, screechy thing that eventually resolves into Hitler opening the 1936 Olympics. Oh, well, I just spoiled it for people who haven't seen it. It's only a couple or three decades old.
NBC Moscow calling NBC New York. Come in. Well, there they went.
That was perfectly timed.
I didn't mean to frighten them. I was just... No, I have this blooper tape of this guy in the NBC Bureau.
The hell is
there
that?
He is.
Oh, hello, stress line person. Are you there?
Over.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Who that?
When did you add me onto the call?
Like four or 5 minutes ago. And I just left you.
Well,
hi, Tracy. I just
apologize.
Left you. Open. That's okay. That's okay. Are you home?
I'm like, actually, I just got I was on my way to go get tacos at my favorite taco joint, and then I realized motherfuckers ain't open on Monday. So now I'm pulling into In-N-Out. So I'm gonna go ahead and put you on hold, and order my food, and then I'll come back.
Okay, get something yummy.
Oh, In-N-Out.
I will.
Okay.
You know, I saw something on the news the other day. They've taken them further east.
Well, I think, didn't they open up one in Texas and there was a line like 10 miles long to get an In-N-Out?
Oh, yeah. People waiting 8 hours to...
You know, frankly, you can keep your... I mean, I probably won't eat any more fast food burgers if I'm able to stick to my guns. But you can... I've never had In-N-Out. Maybe it's as wonderful as they say. But for my money, give me Culver's.
See, I didn't find it to be. When I got here, even when I had visited a couple of times, people said, oh, you must try, next time you're here, you must try In-N-Out. And I gave it a couple of honest tries, Robin. I honestly did. And I'm no great connoisseur of burgers, but...
Oh, I'm a connoisseur of burgers.
From what I was told, I was led to believe they were going to really be, you know, take you home sort of experiences, Epicurean delights or whatever. And I won't say it was a nothing burger, but it was not to me as advertised. And I was put off by the goddamn Bible verses.
By the Bible verses, yeah. We've got a joint over in Beckley that I guess is like a southeastern chain now called,
Thumpers?
No. Cookout. Cookout. That's what it's called. Cookout. And you get it, you know, everything has a freaking Bible verse on it. If I wanted Bible, I'd go to Chick-fil-A.
And Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah. Scott, you know what? You guys, as all these years that I've been going to In-N-Out, pretty much because, you know, I've lived in L.A. all my life. But, I have lived in L.A. all my life. But with In-N-Out, they weren't in L.A. City. They were L.A. County, like Baldwin Park and like San Gabriel Valley. So I really didn't have my first In-N-Out burger until 1986 or so. And Scott, you know what, sweetheart? You are absolutely right. It is not all that, but I really wanted tacos, and there's a taco guy, people that set up this huge, elaborate, it's not even a taco stand, it's kind of a taco experience, and they do the homemade tortillas. I can't think of the word because my brain isn't working and it hasn't been working lately. But anyway, they have the best tacos. And I got off of the freeway on Sherman Way specifically to get the tacos. And then as I got off the freeway, I'm like, fuck, they're not there on Monday. So I'm like, okay, fuck it. I'll just get In-N-Out because I'll know, you know, because I haven't eaten since I left Portland. And yes, I'm home technically, but I had a wonderful time. I got to see Chris, but mostly it was I spent time just me and my son time. And let me tell y'all, of course, I missed him terribly already. Oh God. Okay, I'm not gonna do. But he's doing so well. But I miss him so much. But anyway, we had a great time. We went to the Oregon Historical Society. And you know me, I was reading, and they had this plaque. I think I took a picture of it. Basically say, okay, yeah, we never really, you know, we have a lot of work to make up for the fact that we haven't, you know, in the past, we acknowledged nobody in Oregon except for white people. So... we have to do better. But they, one of the exhibits they were talking about, the first black woman to actually get a homestead in Oregon. And they had part of the Motown exhibit on loan from the Grammy Museum out here. And you saw the food that we ate. We went bowling. I have a thing about horror movies, and Jan doesn't really like them. So, Alex and I went and saw Megan about the the scary AI doll, murderous doll, that actually gives Chucky a run for his money, let me tell you. And Saturday we went bowling with my sister and another cousin. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see my niece and my great niece because they were the baby was sick, and my niece's husband was sick, so we didn't get the chance to see them. But it was just, I didn't rather because he was up there. So, and then yesterday we went to the casino. That's Chris met us up at the casino. We went and had brunch, which was not all bad. But again, it was just about spending time with Alex. And then we went and saw Moulin Rouge, Chris, Alex, and I. It was
because you're the Moulin Rouge fangirl. I know that.
Huge fangirl. This last night was my third time seeing it. And I was talking to my sister because she went and saw it Wednesday. But my sister, I love her, but sometimes I'm like, are you sure you're not blonde? Her and her husband, they went to the wrong theater, so they missed the first 10 minutes of the show, which is the most amazing opening act you've ever seen in a musical. And so I told her, I said, okay, we have to go and do a little sister, big sister trip to New York so we can see it on Broadway.
Ooh, that'd be fun. And speaking of which, because I know you've seen it, I know you've seen it now. I don't often do the, oh, you got to see this, but you know where I'm going. The other night, it was like, what are we going to watch? And then I noticed, what is it, Peacock, I think? They've got, and you watch ads at the front, and then it's uninterrupted for the rest of the time, Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. What?
Oh, my God.
A wonderful, wonderful movie.
I saw it. I'm going to watch it again at home so I can see it on the bigger screen. But I watched it. It's so funny because I always forget I'm not going to pay for Wi-Fi on the plane. And I had gotten on the plane and I had on my way to Portland. And I remembered I told you I was going to watch it on the plane because the flight was about, the flight to is about 2.5 hours and it's about a 2-hour movie. And I had just enough time before we took off to watch it. You know, and download it rather.
And so you did watch it?
Yes, I watched it on the plane. And it was like you said, baby, it was old time Hollywood. I mean, I saw it all coming. Thank you. I saw it coming a mile away, but still, I couldn't care.
But it was a classic Hollywood fairy tale. The minute, you know, granted, it's two very romantic settings, but the first thing I thought of was Roman Holiday. You know, Gregory Peck, Audrey Hepburn.
Yes!
Only, you know, about 45 degrees different. I loved it. I loved every character, you know, it was just, and... You know, it centers on the House of Dior. And when they did the fashion show, it's like, Annette and I were sitting there watching it together, and it's like, no, not that one. No, not that one. Yeah, maybe that one. And then, of course, we both immediately landed on the dress that she wanted. And I don't want to do any more giveaways, but It was just a delight. It was just a delightful film. At the end of it, I was just so, because I don't feel that way about movies that often anymore. I just felt really glad that I had spent 90 minutes watching that.
Well, help me out because I know
that,
the title,
it seems like it was the perfect.
Who was in it? I know the plot and the title, but I can't remember who's in it.
I didn't, the lead, Mrs. Harris, she's a CBE, a commander of the British Empire, so she's been almost knighted. Not that familiar with her work. And I didn't really recognize anybody. But oh, it's wow. a beautiful.
The only person that I recognized was Brother Man that played the Archie. He was the one of the bad guys from Harry Potter.
Yes,
Jason Isaacs.
Yeah, he was Daddy Malfoy.
Yeah, he was Daddy Malfoy.
Leslie Manville plays Mrs. Harris. Alba Baptista plays Natasha. Lucas Bravo plays Andre. Jason Isaacs is Archie. Isabel Huppert. And it, just all the little storylines. And when they get her up on the platform to measure her, and they take her measurements. You know, this is an older woman, and they. You have the proportions of a model. Oh, my little heart went pitter-pat, and little tears welled up in the corners of my eyes.
Well, I have to watch it, because I know.
Scott, it's just a beautiful film.
Oh.
Is it one of those you're glad you took the time once you
watched it? Yeah, I'm just, it was the...
Yes.
It was just 90 minutes well spent in a totally... mostly escapist, you know, kind of thing. You know, that there's no real, the closest you come to actual villains in it,
there was this obvious villains were the people who felt like told her that she didn't belong there, you know, because she is a cleaning woman.
Yeah, she's a clean
and
lady.
You're like, well,
and she wants a Dior dress, damn it.
So, and she was haute couture. And they're like, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, why don't you go
and
to
this
Woolworths?
That blah, 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 but with a French accent.
Le blah, you know? Le blah, le blah.
But, thank you, sis. Thank you, sis. But, yeah, no, it was, like I said, I don't typically watch. You know, I watch episodic television on my phone, but watching movies, I usually don't. But I made the effort because, like I said, I told you, I was going to watch it on my outbound flight. And then I realized, like I said, I'm like, shit, I got to download it. And I had just enough time because I got upgraded to first class. So I got to board the plane early. And so I had just enough time before the plane took off I was on 5G. You know, we hadn't started taxiing or anything. And, but it was, I just really enjoyed the movie. And like I said, when I get home, I'm going to watch it on, you know, my 75-inch television. Okay, shut up. As you guys know, I went up to the Pacific Northwest and, you know, visited my son. And I had to deal with my brother-in-law. And actually, he was very subdued. His brother, who had been very sick for a long time. So I got in Thursday night. And me and Alex and my sister had all these plans. And Friday morning, I called my mom because I sent her, I think I sent you the picture too, Robin. And it was fucking 7 o'clock at night, y'all. And it was dark as I, it was so dark. I'm like, when I woke up and I looked outside the window, I seriously thought it was still nighttime. The fucking sun hadn't risen yet. I'm like, what in the world? And so I called my mom.
7 o'clock in the morning?
No sun, y'all. I mean, I was like,
"That happens up north."
This is some bullshit.
Didn't you know?
I know that shit, but goddamn it, I'm from here. That's why I don't live in Alaska, motherfucker. Shit. I called my mom and I started talking, and she's like, "Pump your."
Be thankful that you didn't see the Aurora Borealis. You would have really freaked. You know, the fucking Northern Lights.
Okay. And so I called my mom And she, I started talking. She's like, wait a minute. And she interrupted me. And she's like, have you talked to Alex yet? I said, no. So she's like, well, because my sister-in-law called my mom because he lives in North Carolina, and my mom has, you know, spent time with him before he, you know, because whenever, like, once they would do this trip, Rachel and Bob, they would, like, it was that East Coast pilgrimage. They would basically start at my mom's house and then go see his brother as well in North Carolina, and then go, I think, like, to Pennsylvania and New York, because I think Bob's from Pennsylvania somewhere anyway. So anywho, my mom's like, well, you know, Bob's brother died. His wife has been trying to get a hold of Bob and Rachel, but nobody's answering the phone. So then I kept calling Alex. He finally called me back. And I told him what happened. And I said, please go knock on the door and, you know, let Rachel or let Bob know what's going on. And he's like, okay. So he said, I'll call you back. So he calls me back and he's like, well, they didn't answer the door. I said, well, why didn't you knock and just announce yourself? He's like, because they both have guns and I didn't want to be shot at.
Well, there's that.
So, anywho, so once I got past that, because I didn't say anything. I just said, okay. So finally, Rachel finally called me. She woke up and finally called me, and I told her what happened. And so, you know, and so that kind of threw everything off for our weekend, but it still turned out nice. But here is some exciting news. So, as I don't know if you guys, you know, Alex moved to Portland, and he's been living with Rachel and Bob. So, and of course, you guys have heard me over the past few years about my brother-in-law, who is a Trumper. And so, Alex has been there for about over a year now. And because the only news that Bob watches, of course, is Fox News. Well, because of me, my wonderful son is influenced. Guess who's been listening to NPR?
Yes?
My brother-in-law.
Well, he's listening. He's listening to find out what the libs are up to.
Well, no. Actually, Alex has been, you know, chipping away at him, and they've actually, because Alex does not let him get away with the bullshit. Because, I'm, you know, hit motherfuckers over the head with a 2x4, right? But Alex is the polar opposite of me. He'll make a point, and he's very subtle about stuff. Because I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I'm kind of argumentative. I know. It's shocking. I know. But they've actually had conversations, and he's, you know, I don't think he'll ever stop voting Republican. I'm not stupid enough to think that. But in the time that Alex has been there, he's made more progress with the way. Because even I kind of noticed a change in him, because usually I just really want to strangle his ass. But again, I didn't spend that much time with him because I didn't see him until Sunday, when we all went to brunch. I just had a great time, y'all. And I so desperately miss my son. But again, he's happy. He's thriving. And the thing is, though, he's still, you know, we're still trying to get him out of the house. So him and Chris really hit it off. And so they're going to be making plans to hang out and stuff like that. So, yay. I need another guy.
He had a gorgeous smile. He just had the biggest old smile on his face. And that was just beautiful.
That's my baby. My son is gorgeous. I mean, of course, I'm incredibly biased, but I've been told by other folks that my son is gorgeous. So it's just, confirmation that I've already known that my baby's gorgeous. But yeah, no, it was another thing about Oregon, y'all. The people are so freaking polite. Okay, I have been there since Thursday, right? And I just left this afternoon. Do you know that I did not hear one person blow their horn the whole time I was there? That's one of the things Alex pointed out to me. He's like, it was just really weird. He's like, the people are so polite, they let you out, you know, they don't run you over trying, you know, and try to, you know, not constantly jockeying for position. They don't cut you off on the freeway, blah, blah, blah. But what he did point out to me, and it became a game, anytime we saw somebody driving like an asshole, he's like, they're more than likely for Washington. And yeah, every time, Robin.
Okay. We have a thing here. And it's almost 100% foolproof with another state. Yes.
And
were you on the eastern Oregon or western? Because I've never been up there, but I hear there's a difference.
Dude.
If you're in the eastern.
Dude, okay, well.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, were you like, you might as well be in Idaho and all that? Fuck, no. You're in the western part.
Well, the eastern Oregon contingent's going to be heard from, I'm sure.
But that was, I guess, the western part because I was over by the airport. When Alex and I went to the movies, we went to Vancouver, Washington to see the movie, which was only 15 minutes from the airport. So we went to Washington to go to the movies, and we went to Washington to go to the casino. And then Chris and I, we went back to the casino after we saw Moulin Rouge. Alex went home because he had to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to work today. And I'm like, because Chris had the day off. I said, how do white boys get Martin Luther King Day off and my son didn't? But yeah, I said it. But no, he, you know, we had a really, really good time. And he promised me that we would visit more often. Because I said, I can't go months without seeing my child. It's just, it's too hard on me. Now I know how my mom feels about, well, my middle brother's in North Carolina with her, and my brother Solomon, he's in Georgia, so they're not that far.
I haven't seen my youngest. I haven't seen my youngest in 5 years. I've never met my little grandson.
I don't know how people do it, Robin. I just.
Well, that's not my choice.
I can't. I know. It's just, you know. But I'm glad, you know, that I got to see him. And I'm looking forward to, you know, the next visit and stuff like that. But you were talking about smoking earlier in the. Did I hear you correctly? Because I tuned in. Not you were basically ending it. So these motherfuckers. So they're gonna be able to smoke, and on the Congress's floor. So what? I mean, where
no, they won't be. They won't be able to smoke
everywhere.
On the floor, but they can smoke in their offices, and the hallways will stink, and you know, smoke in their committee rooms and. So, you know, non-smokers who go in there will have to breathe that filth, you know, because, you know, they're killing themselves with lung cancer. They're working on their lung cancer to own the libs.
Why is it?
Well, it's like for me, because, you know, Jan smokes in the house. And I don't smoke. And so the last time I went to the doctor, yes, I'm going to the doctor because I could feel the eye roll on me. Shut up. They asked, he's like, I know you don't smoke, but I can tell by your lung capacity that you live with someone who smokes. that you are constantly, you know, inhaling secondhand smoke. And I'm like, yes. And so Jan got on my, she called, I called her this morning to let her know, you know, that I was on my way to the airport. And she's like, you need to go to the doctor because you can't get rid of that cough. And I went, and it took everything I had not to say, well, even if I get, how am I to get rid of the fucking cough if you don't stop smoking in the house? I'm not asking her. I mean, of course, the ultimate goal is for her to stop smoking, period. But to stop smoking in the house, the shit reeks. Okay. She's, I don't know, she's delusional in the idea that just because she smokes in one small corner of the house, that I'm like, it doesn't, I said, smoke goes everywhere. And it doesn't matter that you smoke and there's, we have, you know, these fake air filters or what have you. Bitch, I'm dying. I'm not saying I'm dying, but it's like, you're slowly killing me. And I don't even smoke. I can't. I've been having issues with everything
changed for me when I quit. And it just, yeah. By the way, I meant to tell you, you didn't know it, but you started the burger wars in the Horn Family Community Congregation.
I knew that would happen. I just somehow
it couldn't not.
I knew it was coming.
You know, so Shorty in L.A., who just, by the way, took us down to Ralph's responded to Steve's challenge, so we got down to, we're down to $180 to go.
Yay!
And it was just a $300 day, so we're down to $180 to go on that. It would be great if we could pull that off. And then, like I said, the burger wars, because Shorty chimed in and said, Fuddruckers forever. So we've got a Fuddruckers vote. And then I heard from Elbert in Rhode Island, who said, I'm from Houston. When I visit Houston, we go to Whataburger as soon as we leave the airport.
Whataburger
is valid. There are Whataburgers all along the Gulf Coast down there, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and they're genuinely respectable burgers.
You know, I never found out, speaking of burgers, Robin, on your trips to D.C., and I know you haven't had one in a while.
I haven't been in forever because it's on the list. It's still a going concern. And I, what's the name of it again?
Ollie's Trolley. Ollie's Trolley or just Ollie Burgers. Sometimes it's a walk-in, sit-down place. But I'm going to check and see if they have them in other parts of the country. There may be one, and I'm not aware of it.
Not in this state.
Really?
Yeah.
No, that's too bad.
But, by the way, Brother Deacon Asa said, In-N-Out does have one thing going for it. Those patties have a respectable crust. So there's that.
Yeah. But the problem with In-N-Out Burger, because my mother's hilarious. She's
beyond
like,
the Bible verses?
I might as well be eating pepperoni. You know, that's what I was meant to say. In all these years that I have been eating In-N-Out Burger, because, and until, you know, a few years back, y'all said something. I'm like, what Bible verses? I had no fucking clue because I don't, you know.
I had no clue that they were
Bible verses.
I wonder if they've ever put, and Lot was a righteous man, you know. I'm sorry.
Looking at a cup right now.
Where
are the Bible verses? Because I have a soda water in my hand.
In the rim, the inner rim of the, I think, as I recall, it's been a while.
Oh, here we go in the shake. Here it goes. Proverbs 3:5 on my shake. John 3:16. Oh, my God. All these years, y'all, all these fucking years, it kind of
reminds me of back when we started the war against Afghanistan, and we found out that there was an arms manufacturer who was carving a or incising a Bible verse into like the barrel of the automatic rifles that we were equipping our troops with.
No way. Oh, well, speaking of Bible, y'all. So, you know, Alex, I stayed in a hotel because my sister and brother-in-law live in BFE in Oregon. And I'm like, I want to be close to the city because I don't like being in BFE. And so, anywho,
don't come to West Virginia.
We were staying at the Hyatt by the airport. And so Alex is opening the drawers and he's like, there's a Bible. I said, getting in Bibles are still an ongoing. I have, in all the hotels that I've been in the last few years, I haven't seen a Gideon Bible in a million years.
You're kidding me.
So I was like, the Hyatt House or the Hyatt Park Place or whatever it is, by Portland International Airport, y'all, in the drawer, there was a fucking Gideon Bible.
I haven't been in a motel room or a hotel room that didn't have one.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I haven't. That's the thing, because, you know, Jen and I go to Vegas all the time, and I hadn't seen a Gideon Bible in years. So I was like, wow.
Well, I wouldn't.
I didn't even know they still existed.
I wouldn't think that the Vegas hotels would have Bibles. I mean, they can't. They burst into flame whenever they're brought in by the cartload into the facility.
Well, I mean, if any place needs a damn Bible, it would be in fucking Vegas.
Yeah, well, yeah, that
you know, the goddamn sinner. So I was like, so I was shocked. I tell you, shocked. I'm like, because I was just like, where the hell is there a Bible? I said, son, back in the day, Gideon, every hotel motel room that you went to, there was a Gideon Bible in the nightstand. So, yeah. So that part. Well, fellas, I am going to go in my house and eat my food. It was wonderful talking to you.
You did not just fella me.
Unless you fellowed one of us, and I don't think it was you.
It was plural.
Okay, good night, folks. I am so sorry that I'm just, fuck you, Robin. God damn it. You know, you're just trying to be ugly because I see what you did, what you're doing there.
I'm there.
You're just being ugly because of the pictures of the food that I sent you while I was in Portland and that I'm about to go in my house and eat an In-N-Out burger. Okay, whatever, bitch.
You earned it.
I'm feeling really bad that I accidentally misgendered you. That I thought about. I'm like, oh, bitch, no. Okay. I see you. I see what you're doing.
I was just sitting there in the weeds waiting. Now here I am trying to acclimate myself to never enjoying food again, and she's sending me these pictures from this. this restaurant that's got all this beautiful in Oregon, this beautiful southern food and the biscuits and the gravy and the shrimp and the grits were just swimming in melted cheese and then the next thing it's a series of pictures of a freaking burrito. God damn it.
With homemade flour tortilla, by the way, Robin.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Yeah, rub it in. Well, at least you ain't got...
twisting it, okay.
At least you don't got no Culver's out there. I don't got one either, but, you know, that's the best burger, period.
I've been to Culver's because both of my nieces worked there at one point in Georgia. Oh, shit, it's cold. It's colder in LA right now than it was in Oregon. To me, from LA, the OG Fatburger. Because, I mean,
yeah,
I like Five Guys, but I don't really think I need to take, I don't want to have to take out a second mortgage on my house just to eat a goddamn hamburger.
Yeah, that's the thing. Five Guys, you know, you can... This is just a general reference, but you can sit down and have dinner at, you know, a sit-down dinner at freaking Outback Steakhouse and you can, for what you spend at Five Guys.
You know, we've got one.
Exactly. Absolutely.
From here.
You get cable... Look.
Go, Scott.
I haven't gone to Five Guys, and everybody raves about it.
Well, the fries are fantastic.
No,
the burgers are good.
The burgers are good, but you know, I mean, literally, and Robin and I are not, you know, both of us can be prone to hyperbole, but there is no lie. You go to Five Guys, and if you get a burger, fries, and shake, or soda, or whatever, I don't know if they do shake.
You're crossing $20.
I don't remember, Robin.
You're crossing
$20. No, baby, it's closer to 30.
Yeah.
You know, you're slapping $30 per fucking person. And I'm like, motherfucker. Okay, so like I just went to In-N-Out. And one of the good things about In-N-Out, they are really reasonable. So I got Janet Double Double. I got myself a cheeseburger animal style. Two orders of fries. I got a shake. And Jan got a lemonade. $19.
For this day and age,
so
that's
I got
not
two
insane.
Burgers, two orders of fries.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's a beautiful thing, especially L.A. prices, y'all.
Yeah.
Come on now.
You'd be, no,
but
anyway,
if you were at Five Guys,
you know, that'd have been $45.
Well, what do they make their burgers from? I mean, to charge that type of money for a fucking hamburger.
Who
knows?
Yeah, I mean, and the other burger joint
is not. I don't know what it is, but.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean a regular order of fries is literally a convenience store brown paper sack full of French fries. So I mean they're not shortening or anything. Their regular burger is a double.
Are the fries skinny?
No.
Or are they
They're thick and they're perfectly crispy on the outside and all wonderful and mushy on the inside.
Oh, I would love
I'll probably
that.
Never eat another one.
Do they deliver?
Nah, well, maybe DoorDash.
Yeah,
they might. If you have Grubhub, baby, they probably do. But anyway, I gotta go. I'm going in the house.
Go,
I love you guys.
Go eat your burger. Love you. So the other burger joint that hasn't gotten any love here, not maybe because the Midwestern contingent hasn't chimed in. Steak and Shake.
Oh, I love Steak and Shake.
You know, they take those little burger pucks that are about the size of a sausage patty, and they're frozen as hard as can be, and they throw them on the grill, and then they do the thing with the two spatulas until
they smash the hell out of them.
Yeah, and, you know, and I thought of them when Brother Deacon was talking about the fact that the patties have a respectable crust. There is no hamburger with a prettier lace edge than a Steak and Shake burger.
I'm trying to think. It's got to be 25, 30 years since I've been to Steak and Shake.
And they really are good. Of course, for anybody who ever finds their way to Florence, Alabama, it's a little hole in the wall. It's called Stag's Grocery, and there is no better hamburger on planet Earth. It's this lovely woman owns it. She worked her ass off there from like when she started working there when she was a teenager, and eventually bought the place. And she hasn't changed it a bit. It's called Stag's Grocery.
Huh.
And you can get a wonderful breakfast there on a styrofoam plate in the morning. They make their biscuits. You know, these are real biscuits. These aren't freaking McDonald's biscuits. These are the real deal. And the burgers, you know, they patty them out by hand. They put them on the grill. And then they take the bun, you know, while the burger's still cooking, when it's almost done, they put the cheese on it so it'll melt real pretty. And then they toast the bun in the hamburger grease. There's something magical that happens there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will allow myself that when I get back to Florence again, because a Stag's Grocery. There were different. There was a place in Florence called, Oh, God. My dad would stop there when he was coming home from the 4 to 12 and get burgers and coffee. When he was coming home from work, and he'd come home, and him and my mom would sit there and have burgers and coffee at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning. And little bitty me would crawl up between them and have little bites of fries and burgers. What was the name? And then whoever was doing those burgers went out to Shoals Creek and set up a place called The Galley, and that was where those burgers were, and then Stagg's Grocery. And they were all identical, and they were just heavenly. Absolute. And Stagg's Grocery is still... And, of course, it's not a chain, so you're only going to there. Let's see. Freddy's Frozen Custard, Asa says, they have a pretty respectable smash burger, too. You know, like Steak and Shake does. God, this is just hell on me, by the way, in case you're wondering, Scott.
Well, I'm thinking that's another thing I've not had for years is frozen custard. I think the last time
Culver's is famous for their frozen custard.
There was a place in I remember it from young childhood, 5, 6 years old. And they had outside of it a large concrete polar bear.
This was in Northern Virginia.
Yeah, just if you're ever in Alexandria, go down there around First Street. There's an old theater called the Virginia Theater, and they were in the parking lot behind Hot Chops, Hot Chops still exist. But it was a frozen custard place. God, I can't. Becker's or Baker's or something like that, I think was the name of it. But God, that was, we would go watch my older brother play Little League Baseball. And if we behaved ourselves, they would take us to the polar bear place that we didn't even know the name of it when we were that young. And God, it was actual frozen custard, Robin. It wasn't soft serve. It was like the real deal.
That's the way Culver's is. It's, yeah. None of this stuff from, no, and that goopy stuff that Wendy's passes off for their, Frosties? Oh, those things are disgusting.
No.
I don't think there's any milk involved with that. It's just vegetable oil. You ever seen a melted Frosty? They're disgusting.
No, I don't think I want to.
Ugh.
But, well, this must be burger night at the Horn.
Well, apparently it is.
I get them from Amazon. This, like, multiple servings of White Castles. And they're not as good as getting them at an actual White Castle, you know, a drive-up in the dead of night. But I'm telling you, the frozen ones are not that bad if you cook them right. They are...
Oh, no, the frozen crystals and frozen White Castles, they're not terrible.
Crystals, yeah, that's another. Where are they based?
I think the first Crystal was started in Nashville.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And I was there's a Crystal. The first Crystal when I come out of West Virginia, headed for Alabama, is at like Vanceburg or Olive Hill, Kentucky, on I-64 before you get to Lexington. And I always used to stop there. I'd leave here, wouldn't eat, make sure I'm good and hungry. But every Crystal I've been to in the last couple of years, the quality is way off. So I don't know what's going on there, but it's going on.
Well, one of these days we're going to have to get you into the nation's capital, and if they're still around, get you into an Ollie's.
If I get back to DC, I will. I want to go back. We got to have a strategery meeting about the AIC Act. See where we're going in this madcap Congress. We have to get that bill reintroduced.
I would be afraid if I were like an activist or a lobbyist or visiting the various members, I'd almost be afraid to go into the place in today's world, at least on the House side, because those fuckers are crazy.
Yeah, there'll probably be a Republican standing on a corner. Hey, lady, you want a cigarette?
Well, it would be, you know, you almost. Where in the world are these temples with the ornate statues of the dogs at the entrances? Is that an Asian thing?
Yeah, yeah, that sounds.
You kind of expect some sort of ornamental monster creature representation.
Pretty
and all of the, you know, as you enter the lobby, you're surrounded by these fucking not gargoyles, but you know, stone representations of the weird animals and creatures and things that go bump in the night. I mean, it frightens me, the thought of it.
Oh, and by the way, Lee in New York tells me Ollie's Trolley is available in Cincinnati.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, wait a minute. Yes, I did know that, because I think that's the last time I've had Ollie's. I can't remember whether it's on a trip to D.C. or in, because now that I hear it, I remember, I could almost tell you where in Cincinnati it is, because I know I've been there more than once. Oh, yeah, yeah. Now I'm just salivating all over.
Oh, that. I know. I'm, you know.
Good advice.
I don't know. I'll get done with the program and go munch merrily on a piece of lettuce or something.
Jeez. Well,
although I did find a thing. God, I'm so grateful. There's a brand of, and it's in the dairy section. There's a brand of rice pudding called Cozy Shack. And they make a no-sugar added rice pudding. You can't tell it's sugar-free. It has this beautiful vanilla flavor, this creamy custard to it. Speaking of custard. And it has 5 grams of carbs, and I've become absolutely devoted to... I have one of the little tiny cups every night before bed, and that makes me happy. It satisfies, you know, that sends the sweet tooth into remission. And but I'm actually, you know, I sound like I'm pissing and moaning. I'm not. I'm actually looking forward to getting back to healthiness and dropping some weight and, you know, because, you know, if I could get down to 190, I weighed 186 when I left for college.
The trick is getting it from a regimental thing into just a normal thing that you don't think twice about. And that's why I was never successful on any diet. But when I started eating more sensibly, that made all the difference, because it wasn't a have to sort of thing.
If it becomes a want to, then it's easier to maintain. Well, I see
the benefits of it.
Yeah.
And then you know that you're not burdening yourself in any inordinate way. And it just that sort of feeds into the, you know, the good behavior.
I have bacon every couple of mornings, and there's, you know, I check the label. You know, a long time ago, Todd said that Food Lion brand bacon is the bomb. And he's right. It is. No sugar in it. Beautiful flavor. I don't like my bacon all, you know, ossified and hard and crispy. I like it chewy. And so every
sandwich quality.
Yes. Bacon. Yes.
Yeah, like a BLT or.
And you know, I could have a BLT on that keto bread. Yeah, I'm stoked for that. I'm going to do that soon. Trying to eat it. Yesterday, I was very good. I had a little mini for the brunches at Tamarack. They do every Sunday. They do Chef's Choice quiche, and they're little individual quiches. So I ate the quiche out of the crust. Didn't eat the crust. It was delicious, and had a little piece of trout with lemon brown butter on it. That was wonderful. Loved it.
See if they'll allow you to have that Ezekiel bread, because I don't know what the hell's in it. I think the recipe somehow is from the Bible. It's listed in the pages of the.
No, it'd probably catch fire. It would probably go up in flames the minute I opened it.
But no, I'm telling you. There's no better toast in the world than a piece of Ezekiel bread, moderately toasted, not burnt to a crisp, but like medium brown.
Yeah, just somewhat golden.
With a little butter and a little honey on it, I'm telling you, it'll take you home.
Ooh, that sounds so good. I've gotten very fond. I bought whole milk, plain yogurt, no sugar, no nothing, and got some blackberries and raspberries and. Put the raspberries in the bottom of the bowl, hit them with about 4 packs of Splenda, and then put the yogurt on top of it and start smashing the berries and working it together. And it's absolutely delicious. I love that. I mean, a lot of these things I don't mind. It's just there's something about being told I can't have something. You know, I'm a 2-year-old when it comes to that.
Yeah, well, that was why I remember when I was in junior high, I got to be a at the G.C. Murphy Five and Dime. I used to have to shop at the young age of 12 and 13, the Husky department, you know, which is another polite way of saying fat ass. Come on over here, fat ass, and we'll see if we can fit you, you know. And I didn't like being in that category. And I remember one summer I went on. Somebody had given me a copy of what Weight Watchers was doing back in those days. And I found that there was a list of prohibited stuff that you could never have under any circumstances. But a lot of it was stuff I wouldn't be eating anyway. You know, and I forget how much I dropped. But when I went back to school, I had all new clothes because the other stuff would hang on me. It wouldn't fit me anymore. I don't know what's happened to me since. I guess the ravages of time have just ganged up on me, and I'm just a shell of my former self. But you keep doing the right thing with your diet, and you're, you know, taking your measurements.
Yeah, I'm all fresh out of vices.
Well, yeah, and see that there's something about the vice-free life that. I don't know.
No, I'm afraid I'm just gonna go out to the mailbox one day, and there's gonna be it won't be like I ordered it or anything. There'll just be a nun's habit in a package there waiting.
Oh dear.
For
me. So what would your nun name be, Sister Mary? Evangeline.
No. I don't know, Sister Susie Bariatricus.
Bariatricus. Okay, I like that. That's the patron saint of
hungry people.
Hungry people. Well, don't be like Sister Tarsicius.
No, we know about Sister Tarsicius.
Who farted on the magazine that my mother sent to school with me that had the nice Christmas story, the Family Circle magazine or whatever the hell it was. And I kept pestering her, and she deliberately took it off the desk, put it onto her wooden chair, and sat on it. And as I was turned and walking away, I heard this sound like ripping a fabric window shade lengthwise. It's the longest fucking fart that ever came out of a human being. I've heard dogs do it, but I've never
heard it. Just went on and on.
And you just don't think of especially foghorn sort of flatulence, which is like ships would be directed into port. By the sound of this coming up.
Well, you know, I was thinking about having a little snack when the end of the show came, but that ship has sailed. Speaking of foghorns, well, let's end this with some with another example of MLK Day commemoration by a really gross white right wing asshole.
Oh God!
Horn Family Community Congregation, I give you little. Neo-maxi zoom-dweeby Benny Shapiro, the guy who doesn't understand why his wife never gets wet.
I mean, I'm married. I've got a wife. She never gets wet.
The greatest cell phone in the history of the entire Internet. So today he said, every MLK Day we are treated to a bevy of think pieces on how the only way to achieve MLK's dream is to embrace group redistributionism and racial discrimination. No MLK Day think pieces have ever said that. That exists only in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between Benny Shapiro's ears and pass for brains. MLK may have made such arguments in 1968, but that simply isn't the dream or the pathway we celebrate him for. Oh, shut the fuck up, you little dweeb. God, he's a walking excuse to give him a fucking swirly. Well, it didn't go well for him. Somebody immediately responded, I have a dream that you would go away and stop sharing your terrible hot takes on everything under the sun. And another individual replied to him and said,
It's okay to not be racist for a day, Ben. It really is.
Builds character.
And then a Jewish lady said, you know, you're such a pathetic little capo. It, which he is.
Little capo?
Yeah. You know, the people, who, the Jews who cooperated with the Nazis.
Yeah, yeah. And she's not far from wrong on that. I mean, people like that, they have no capacity for happiness or contentment or just let it live and let live. There's an old tradition that needs rediscovery in some circles, don't you think? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But that would be too much like right. They it doesn't compute for them. They're not wired correctly. They need it. Well, it's like I've said, and you always get a kick out of it. They need to be sent in for regrooving.
They need to be regrooving.
You know?
Man, their grooves are all out of whack.
Oh, they're all cattywampus and messed up.
Yes.
And you can't function like that.
God, they need it. I gotta get that into my vocabulary. They need a regrooving, y'all.
It's like that Woody Allen movie. Was it Sleeper, where he's the robot or plays the part of a robot?
Yeah,
I think
it's
Sleeper.
Yeah, or there is a robot.
Yes, and there's, I mean, you know, they take them in at the end of the day and they rewire them and they double check them and make sure all the components are. Well, that boy needs to be regrooved in the worst kind of a way, you know?
Someday I got to have a long talk with that boy.
Oh, more than a long talk. Put him up on the workbench and
get the regroover.
The iodes and the diodes attached to, like the fucking U tester machine for your tubes down at Peoples Drugstore, Dirt Drug, whichever one it was. Good God. You remember the U-tester?
Oh, you ended this on a perfect note. And I got one more for you just on the way out.
Okay.
Headline, man going by manic arrested in bungled neo-Nazi bank robbery plot.
Bungled neo-Nazi bank robbery plot. Well, there's got
Brian
to be
Tierney, age 29, of Rustburg, Virginia, was arrested last week for his involvement in an alleged plot by neo-Nazis to commit an armed robbery of a New York bank. According to court documents, Tierney and two other men allegedly planned the armed bank robbery in a chat group called the SS Screenplay Guild.
That's not a ship.
The plotting within the group chat was discussed under a razor-thin facade of making a movie.
The old make-a-movie ruse. Hey, kids, let's go to the...
When has that ever worked except in a movie?
No, I only saw it work...
I mean, wait, isn't this kind of the plot of The Producers?
That's not even producers levels. This is like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland. Hey, kids, let's go to the barn and put on a show. Good God. So did they get pinched?
Oh, yeah, they've been indicted. You know, there's a picture of two of these clowns standing there with a flag with runes on it and a wolf in the middle. And
What place was this bank in? It's got to be...
Johnston, New York.
That's got to be like a Bonnie and Clyde bank heist location, you know, where...
Tierney offered to make fake IDs for the group with identities he stole from people in Iowa and that he had the equipment to manufacture the fraudulent documents.
Now, were there any comments about the penmanship on the note?
Yeah, well, one of them eventually started talking about, well, this is a pretty foolproof plan. Yeah, bro, sounds easy, and the getaway looks clean.
Clean, yes, nothing better than a clean getaway.
You know, we got to stop letting these fuckers watch movies. They watched Kaleidoscope, and now they're all, you know, inspired.
I got to watch that.
Nazis. Effing Nazis.
Narsies.
And by the way, on the way out, just another moment of happiness to go with your regrooving. Brother Deacon Asa says, it's easy to get all depressed about the state of the world, but look at it this way. Alex Jones owes $1 billion to his victims. Ben Shapiro admits that he can't get his wife wet, and the maggots are drinking their own pee. I'd say we win.
There's a lot right with the world when you look at it that way.
Stumbling around with onions in their socks.
Oh, dear, sweet, merciful Jesus. Let's get them regrooved.
Yeah. Rubbing their gums with Wolverine antifungal cream.
Oh, stop it. It's just scaring me again. All right, well, I see by the old clock on the wall.
Yeah, you're watching the clock. We're over time.
I glanced over, and lo and behold, it's 5:01, so you know what that means.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, stick around on the Horn Stream at 9. Tara and I will be filling in for the one and only Mike Malloy.
Oh, where's Mike?
He's having some studio issues right now.
Oh, fuck.
But he hopes to be back either tomorrow or Wednesday.
He doesn't have a snake, does he?
No, that's me, Scott. I'm the one with the studio snake.
These snakes, they're like travelers. They're, you know, circuit riders, circuit riding snakes. They go to all the liberal talk shows trying to...
That's a long crawl. It's a long crawl from the hills and hollers of almost level west by coal Manchinia stand to the foothills of the Appalachians in North Georgia.
Well, some of it's downhill. Snakes, they can be like a little IUD rolling down the old hill until they get to the bottom, and then they wiggle on up.
Slither, slither, slither.
It's a snaky life, but somebody's got to do it. So, anyway.
Well, Scott, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
Oh, it's been great so far. It can't get anything but better. I mean, come on.
Yeah, or, you know, I mean... Check your bank account, see if you've got enough to order a Five Guys burger and find out what all the noise is. But see, that's the thing. I don't think it would work if you ordered it in, because there's a timer that starts the minute they hand them to you. If I leave Beckley coming here, because Annette loves them too, they're awful by the time they get here. Fries have a very limited shelf life. I mean, but it is nice because. And the other thing I was going to mention about Five Guys, if you're a fan of hot dogs, it's a little secret. The hot dogs at Five Guys are freaking delicious. Expensive is it? You know, it's a $6 hot dog.
Are they like all beef?
They're all beef, and they split them and they grill them.
Oh God!
On the split open. Part.
Oh, God, those are tremendous when they're cooked that way.
And you can have them, you know, this is crazy. I get mine with mayo. I hope Tracy's not listening. I get mine with mayo and A1 sauce and pickle relish and jalapenos and cheese.
I can see the pickle relish. I can see the mayo. What else? Jalapenos? I don't want
cheese. A1 and mayo. And
now, I've never tried A1. I'll bet you that would be
good. Oh, it is good. And it just, the mayo really picks it up. And, because mayo is a good thing. And the other thing, when we're sitting down and eating there, I always get a couple of cups of mayo and a few shots of malt vinegar. That's great on a French fry. Believe you me.
I've had it on like Captain D's or Arthur Treacher fish, malt vinegar.
Malt vinegar on fries is wonderful, and the Belgians eat mayo on fries, and I just decided to combine the two one time, and lo and behold.
You were transported to the EU?
Oh, yeah, I declared urethra.
Well, now, wait a minute. That's going to have to wait till another edition of the Horn, because I've got to go in the...
Well,
and
I do too.
Got to go.
Yes, we got to get out of here.
Because you're doing the are doing the mic thing,
right?
Because he's down at the U Testum.
yeah, exactly.
That's
Scott,
the name of it. U Test.
I know it's sitting there right. It's sitting there right next to the Coinstar.
There you go. All righty. You all take care.
All right, Scott, you have a great night, my friend. Go order your fries and burger. Get the hot dog. Fuck the burger. Get the hot dog.
It'll be delicious. I just can almost taste it.
Oh, God. Don't get me started. All right.
See ya.
Bye. And so that's the program. I hope you had a contemplative, peaceful MLK day. Back tomorrow with Titanic Tuesday. Fundraising goal will be at 480 tomorrow. If you're part of the overnight crew, feel free to help out and help me hang on to my car and keep the lights on here. It's a hell of a challenge. Thank you so much to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks so very much. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. That would be Ralphs and Steve and Emilio and Shorty this evening. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Roger in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, pretty please, wherever you listen to the program, like it, subscribe to it, leave some feedback, share it on social media. Let's build this community up. That's always been the goal. Add more voices to the conversation, whether it's by email or social media or call, whatever. Let's build the conversation, because that's where the really incisive stuff happens in the discussion, when it expands beyond just mere simple statements. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. A proud union shop for a year now. Please stay safe. Everybody get your booster, get your flu shot, get your, or wipe down your surfaces, help stop the spread of RSV. There may be an RSV vaccine by next year. That'll be great. Wear your mask. It's that time again. All the hip smart people are wearing masks. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes stumbling and bumbling down the sidewalk towards you saying, "Hey, you got a light? I'm a free American white man. I get to smoke in the Capitol now." Avoid that dude like the plague on more than one level, because he is. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.